This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
A scientific method to pick a president. I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Glad you could be with us. And here's what's coming up during this program.
What if White House candidates were hired like CEOs? We'll examine how Clinton, Trump, and Sanders match up on things like leadership, marketing, and financials.
Some hospitals are limiting the amount of cheerful items that you can bring to friends and loved ones. We'll explain why.
Lowe's has agreed to hire a man who requires the help of a service dog, but under one condition.
And the ultimate wedding playlist.
So the songs that people really resonated with, we had like Hey Ya by Outkast, I Want to Dance with Somebody, Uptown Funk is huge. You had artists kind of banned entirely, like Dave Matthews Band and Maroon 5. I mean, it's your wedding, right? You get to pick who you want to play and who you don't want to play.
Walt Hickey at 538.com on what his readers suggested as must-have and must-avoid songs for a wedding reception. His report later in the hour. With Hillary Clinton having broken historic ground in becoming the Democratic presidential nominee, the latest research shows that she and other women still have a more difficult political landscape than men when they run for office. Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief at USA Today, says those differences exacerbate some of the most serious challenges Mrs. Clinton faces about honesty and likability. Susan, explain.
We looked at the latest research, and it shows that women continue to face some special and particular challenges when they run for office in terms of how voters see them and missee them.
All right. How so? Explain that.
So, for instance, let's look at the question of likability. You know, both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are seen as not very likable. Their negative ratings are at historic highs for each of them. But we found a study that came out this spring that found that voters will vote for a man they think is qualified even if they don't like him. But when they think a woman is qualified, they won't vote for her. They're less likely to vote for her unless they also like her. So likability is more a part of the voting decision for women candidates than it is for male candidates.
Mm. I don't doubt that's true. But what would be interesting for me is that if Mrs. Clinton did not have these scandals attached to her, you know, if she, I don't know, just I can't think of another woman right now who might be in that role, but wouldn't that make it more interesting?
Well, it might make it different. If she was seen as more likable, much more likable than Donald Trump, then this would be less of a factor. But the fact that they're both seen as not very likable means that, at least this research indicates, it hurts her more than it hurts him. And here's another thing that some of the recent research shows. It shows that voters think women are more honest and ethical than men. I don't know if that's consistent with your own experience or not, but that's what,
no doubt.
What voters think.
No doubt.
And yet, if a woman loses that sense of trust, she is punished in a more serious way, and it is harder for her to regain that trust than it is for men. And there's a study that has just come out, an academic study, several professors did this, looking at punishments by the Bar Association for lawyers who are accused of infractions. And they found that when male lawyers and female lawyers have identical infractions, female lawyers are twice as likely to be disbarred.
Really? I wonder what's behind that, I mean, other than what seems to be just sexism.
Well, I think here's what the professionals say is behind it. People assume that women are going to be honest and ethical, and therefore they're more disappointed when they find out they aren't.
It sounds
and of
like,
course, there are some cases where both men and women will disappoint you.
How about that? We're speaking with Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief at USA Today. Her piece is called "Why Are You Yelling? The Questions Female Candidates Still Face." So with regards to your headlines, that has always struck me since this campaign began, and that is that Mrs. Clinton is not a good yeller. When she's trying to get across a point and is competing with crowd noise, she, and this is kind of in the weeds stuff maybe as a broadcaster, but she goes into like a monotone type of yell that I don't think sits well to most people's ears, and I'm not sure if I'm right on that.
Well, now we know that there's a lot of commentary to that about to that point on cable TV and on Twitter. But here's a study that Celinda Lake, who's a Democratic pollster, did several years ago. She did two radio ads. They were identical language. They had identical decibel levels, but one had a male narrator and the other had a female narrator. And when listeners, both men and women, heard the ads, they thought the woman was talking significantly louder.
And speaking of yelling, right, Howard Dean's yell kind of did him in.
It's true.
Several years ago.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. And speaking of Howard Dean and this connection to your story here, how about his comments saying that Elizabeth Warren is too old to be Hillary Clinton's running mate? I mean, is that not another example of kind of what women face here?
Well, it seemed like an odd comment to me, and inappropriate, right? I mean, to judge someone completely by their age. I don't actually know what the research is about whether there's a difference between how women and men are seen as they age, although I guess you do on TV see that there are more older men as newscasters than older women. But it may be an example of ageism as much as sexism.
Thanks, Susan. Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief at USA Today. 12 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Everyone knows that business is all about numbers. Consider the numbers the state of Michigan can offer your business, like being a top 10 pro-business state, or 2,000, the number of unnecessary regulations Michigan has eliminated in the last 5 years, and 6, Michigan's rank for best entrepreneurial climate, which all adds up to the one state that has all that and more, Michigan. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
So hospitals have some inconsistent rules when it comes to bringing items to cheer somebody up. Here's This Weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
If you're visiting a friend or a loved one in the hospital, you might want to leave the flowers and balloons behind. They may not be welcome. Melinda Beck of the Wall Street Journal is here with more. Melinda, flowers have been banned in the ICU for a long time. Why are such bans being extended to other parts of the hospital?
Jennifer, the hospital policies are really all over the map. You can get a completely different policy from one hospital and another one across the street. They're almost always citing health and safety concerns, fear of infection, fear of things just getting in the way of hospital business. And I think we're seeing more because there has been such a crackdown on hospital-based infections, and hospitals are getting judged and rated on all kinds of quality things, and they just don't want distractions to get in the way.
Let's talk about plants specifically. What are the concerns about flowers and even dried flowers and things like that?
So one big concern is allergies, that fresh cut flowers can get pollen that bothers, if not this patient, maybe the patient in the next bed, or get on a healthcare worker's clothing and get into the next room where the patient might be allergic. There's also there have been a variety of different kinds of bacteria found in the vase water in flowers in some studies over the years. And then even potted plants and dried flowers can be a source of mold, and mold spores get in the air. And all of these could be a concern to patients, particularly who have compromised immune systems. That tends to be, you know, a fairly small group of hospital patients, but particularly if patients are moving from one unit to another, if a lot of the personnel are going back and forth, some hospitals seem to be just erring on the side of caution.
Don't the benefits of lifting spirits and making things a little brighter outweigh these concerns?
Well, yes, one would think, and there actually was one study from back in 2010, a randomized controlled trial, believe it or not, where they took about 90 patients who'd had appendectomies and half of them were assigned to recover in rooms with flowers, and half of them were in rooms without. And the patients in the rooms with flowers and plants needed less pain medication and had higher satisfaction scores and actually got out of there sooner. So there are benefits, too. But I think healthcare professionals are erring on the side of caution.
What's the deal with balloons? What's wrong with them?
Well, many hospitals have banned latex of all kinds in recent years, owing to this sharp increase in latex allergy, which can range from just a minor skin irritation to really life-threatening anaphylaxis. And interesting history there. Allergies really weren't known several decades ago, but they've really increased. And experts usually attribute them to both healthcare workers who have a high percentage of these allergies and surgical patients who have had extended contact with latex-coated equipment or wearing latex gloves. You know, there was just since the AIDS epidemic of the 80s and 90s, gloves have become mandatory, and a lot of healthcare workers were coming down with allergic reactions. So a lot of hospitals now are banning latex of all forms. And many of them say Mylar balloons, you know, the metallic kind, are fine. Some hospitals are banning even those.
Check first. This weekend's Jennifer Koschenka with Wall Street Journal health writer Melinda Beck. It's 20 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. As we head toward the official start of summer, here come the warnings about the dangers of prolonged skin exposure to the sun. One of those issuing warnings is a guy who speaks from experience, Baseball Hall of Famer Mike Schmidt, who got skin cancer a couple of years ago. Schmidt played 18 seasons with the Phillies, is widely considered one of the greatest third basemen of all time, and ranked 16 in total home runs for his career with 548. Mike, did you ever wear sunblock during your playing days?
I went out in the sun most of my young life, into high school and college, and most of my major league career without sun protection other than the baseball hat, which, in fact, I don't think protects you as much as it should, but, you know, protects your nose and your forehead. But there's a lot of other parts of your skin that are, for me, almost every day of my life out in the sun. And in 2013, I was lucky enough to have caught a mole on my back at a visit to my dermatologist, and it was diagnosed as melanoma, and spent about a year and a half treating it, and it was a pretty tough year and a half in my life, but it taught me a pretty strong lesson that the sun's rays are very serious, and now I never go out without sunscreen, an SPF 30 or higher. I have a closet full and a drawer full of sun SPF protection shirts and wide brim hats that I wear, and I do my best when I'm out. I still go to a swimming pool from time to time with my grandkids, but I'll sit in the shade, and if I go in the pool, I'll wear some kind of a swim top, and you know, I basically look at the sun as something I want to help to grow the plants in my yard and keep my grass green and, and all that, but something I really don't want to be in much with my bare skin exposed. So yeah, I'm one of the lucky ones, and I guess the what to take from that is you can go actually to spotskincancer.org, and you can get your skin arranged to have your skin screened by a dermatologist at spotskincancer.org, and the American Academy of Dermatology would like to see everyone do that. And you know, I'm fortunate that I can be an example as someone who spent most of his life in the sun without protection, but now I'd never go out without protection, and I hope that I can get that message out.
We're speaking with Baseball Hall of Famer Mike Schmidt. He's teamed up with the American Academy of Dermatology to get the message out about protecting yourself from the sun with sunblock. Go to baseball for just a second. I was reading something before you and I started talking. Was it true Pete Rose at one time said he wished he had your body and he'd be willing to trade his and his wife's and cash to have yours.
Yeah, I think if you go way back, I think old Pete might have said that at one point in time. But, you know, he was great at coming up with little quips like that. And back then when Pete Rose said that about you, you'd have been quite happy, yeah.
Does he belong in the Hall of Fame, Mike? Where do you stand on that?
Well, you know, Pete's career was without question one of the all-time, well, Hall of Fame-worthy careers. Now, if you add in some of the things that have happened in Pete's life, obviously the gambling issue won. He had some issues with the Internal Revenue Service. And, it's very unfortunate that Pete, when he was given an opportunity to, you know, admit to gambling on the game, he didn't for about 14 years, I think. I think he lived in denial, and then eventually he did admit to it, and we thought at that point in time his opportunity to be reinstated and go on to the ballot and have an opportunity to become a Hall of Famer pretty much was based upon whether the commissioner thought that he would restructure his life, and I guess that Mr. Selig and then now the current commissioner has decided that he really didn't do that, yeah. And he wasn't, I guess, contrite enough and remorseful enough and wasn't able to change enough.
I got to ask you, as a radio guy, I always love listening to Harry Callis, and that home run call he made of yours of number 500, tell me you can do a Harry Callis impersonation, because you must have heard that a million times.
Yeah, let's see. Out of here, home run, Michael Jack Schmidt.
I could listen to that all day.
Yeah, that was one of the sort of defining calls of my career, and I'm honored to have had such a great, great announcer and baseball man and friend as Harry Callis, having used that many, many times.
Yeah. Swinging a long drive. Oh, that's just great stuff.
Very yeah, good. That's it. Swinging a long drive. There it goes.
I
even laugh when I want to think about it.
Mike Schmidt, Baseball Hall of Famer. Harry Callis from the Phillies used to call him by his full name on the radio whenever Mike Schmidt hit a home run. Michael Jack Schmidt, 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Mailing your letters and packages has just gotten a lot easier thanks to Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can mail and ship anything, anywhere, using just your computer and printer. No more trips to the post office, and it's so easy. Anyone can do it. Just click, print, and mail. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage right from your desk. Stamps.com does all the work for you. They even give you a digital scale that automatically calculates exact postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail. And setup is easy, too. In just minutes, you'll be printing your very own postage. You'll never have to go to the post office again. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial, plus a $110 bonus offer, including postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in deal. That's stamps.com. Enter deal. With the warmer weather arriving for much of the country, it's time to start tackling those home remodeling projects. Nearly two-thirds of consumers are planning to renovate, according to a recent survey from Lightstream, a division of SunTrust Bank. But as Kelly Grant at CNBC.com warns, if you're considering a home project, it's worth noting that very few earn their cost back when you sell. Kelly, what are you hearing?
We're hearing that more homeowners are interested in doing some big remodeling or home repair projects this year. It's something that they're feeling good about their finances, at least in this regard, or they're feeling like this is a very necessary project. A lot of the indicators are that remodeling spending is going to be on an upswing. There was even a survey from a division of SunTrust Bank that found it's about 40% of Americans plan to spend at least $5,000 on some sort of a big home project this year.
Wow. All right. What would be considered a big home project, or where's that money going, I guess?
It really does run the gamut. I mean, you know, when we look at popular home remodeling projects that definitely range into that, you know, several thousand dollars, it's everything from, you know, home furnishings, adding siding, repairing your roof, or adding insulation, you know, all the way up to, you know, the usual suspects when you think of remodeling, like redoing the kitchen or the bathroom or, you know, adding a home office or a media room.
All right, so what else did you look at here? Because I know you compared a handful of different things.
There was a lot of interesting data from remodeling site House, and they look at their users and sort of see who's spending what based on where they're living. So there are a lot of different types of projects where you see, you know, these costs swing pretty widely. You know, kitchens, for example, New Jersey, actually, the residents there tend to spend the most on their average kitchen project. And then the lowest in that for kitchens is going to be Mississippi. And that's a pretty big difference, average cost of about $44,000 in New Jersey versus $13,000 in Mississippi.
Wow. Can you hire the Mississippi guy to come north and do that?
You would hope that you can find a good local contractor,
jeez.
I think.
All right, what else?
Travel costs are going to boost that.
Right.
Well, you know, I mean, some of them are pretty expected. Like, you're looking at, you know, who's spending the least on patio and landscaping, and, you know, Alaska is down on the bottom there. You know, you can kind of see in some of these where it's expected trends, you know, your deck and your porch projects, Hawaii, that's big there. But, you know, I mean, I would sit out in the sunset every day and, you know, look at that. So not too surprising there. South Dakota, the least on the average for deck and porch projects. They're probably not doing as much sitting outside, I guess.
Right.
So, you know, just it comes down to, you want to be paying attention to what the local trends are in your area, especially, you know, it's very easy for these remodeling projects to get out of control price-wise. So you want to get a good sense of, you know, what is going to be the going rate in your area, how big you really want to go on that project. Because we do see reports year after year. Remodeling Magazine, they do a great cost versus value report. And there are very few projects, only one, in fact, that actually pay for themselves in terms of added value when you go to sell your home.
Wow. And which one is that? Kitchen?
That is attic insulation.
Really?
Costs an average $1,200 and adds about $1,400 in value.
Get out of here. How about that? We're speaking with Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. Her piece is called Where Homeowners Spend Big on Remodeling. You mentioned, too, garage and carport.
Yep, garage and carport's another popular project. And you know, it's one of these where, you know, you're not going to recoup that much at resale. You know, for most of these, you're getting about 2/3 of the value of your project back. So think about any of these very expensive repairs or remodeling that you're doing as something that you're going to enjoy, and not really think about it as something that's going to necessarily pay for itself in terms of added home value.
Thanks, Kelly. Kelly Grant at CNBC.com. 21 minutes before the hour now on This Weekend. All right, here's a question. What if the President of the United States went through the same type of process for the job as a CEO would in the private sector? Tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal of the Enderle Group, tried using the scientific method. Rob set this up.
A while back, I wrote up a methodology for picking a CEO. I'd been observing how so many of the CEOs in place were doing very poorly because their skills weren't matched to the company or the job. And so I thought, what the heck, why don't we apply that same methodology to the candidates? And same candidates then as we have now, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and Trump. So I looked at each of the categories, leadership, love for product, or in this case, we'd love for the country, good financial fundamentals, understanding marketing, and breadth, and then weighted the different candidates against those categories.
All right, so what'd you find with regards to leadership?
There, Trump and Sanders seem to stand out. They've been able to gather a substantial amount of followers without a huge expenditure of money. Sanders in particular, of course, was fighting pretty much upstream from the very beginning, and yet his followers seem to be far more energetic and energized than Clinton's. And that's one of the reasons why he's been able to hang in so long in what really kind of felt to be a fixed election. Trump spent a small fraction of the money that anybody else spent, and was able to get a large number of people voting for him. In fact, just comparing the amount of money he spent to Jeb Bush, I think he's at less than a quarter of what Bush spent, with far more impact. And so it showcased that he could get people behind what he was saying, and looking in the right direction.
All right. So how about on the love for product, not job front?
Well, so I think the Clinton probably stands out, but I'm not convinced it's in a really good way. That she really wants the job. I mean, and feels very entitled to it, and that's very clear in how she's presenting herself throughout the campaign period. So she's the one person that looks like she just have a tremendous passion for the job, but doesn't quite have the same passion for the product that, say, Sanders does. His connection is the deepest to the people and kind of happiness in general, while Trump seems both more focused on safety, but tends to trade one off against the other, so he's probably the most conflicted in this regard. So I'd probably put Sanders in the lead here, with Clinton following, and Trump someplace in the middle.
We're speaking with Rob Enderle, tech analyst, and we're talking about his piece entitled Using the Scientific Method to Pick the Best U.S. President. How about the financial fundamentals?
Well, you would think Trump would stand out here as the leader, since he's the CEO, and that's part of the CEO portfolio of skills. But his financial plan has gotten anything but rave reviews, and Sanders doesn't seem to have the background for it. Clinton's plan is the most viable, her husband's administration was one of the most fiscally sound. So here she leads, and followed by Trump, and then Sanders.
Very good. And then finish up here with marketing. I presume we all know the answer to this one.
Well, yeah, there is no competition. I mean, marketing, Trump stands out. The idea of being able to carry and communicate a vision or an idea or a concept or just getting people to vote for him, he pretty much, as I mentioned before, the fraction of the budget kind of controlled the field. So he seems to get that the best. And I would kind of compare him to, in his terms of his execution, to P.T. Barnum and probably Walt Disney as prior folks that were good. And I've compared him to Steve Jobs a couple times in terms of methodology. So that he's just so far ahead of everybody else in terms of being able to market out his ideas. I would probably put Clinton last. I mean, for somebody that's as experienced as she is, she's had a hard time getting energy into her campaign, and even looking at her brand elements, compared to Make the Country Great Again, the I'm with her thing just doesn't seem to resonate as well. So she just doesn't seem to have the knack for it, with Bernie someplace in the middle.
Thanks, Rob. Tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal of the Enderle Group. 13 minutes now before the hour on this weekend.
A great business needs a stunning website, and with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery, grow your contact list, and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.
It's wedding season, and if you're still in the planning stages, here are some ideas on the music playlist for your reception. Walt Hickey at 538.com, based on reader feedback, has put together the ultimate wedding playlist. Walt, how'd you do it?
We put out a call, and it turns out that if you ask people what they played at their wedding, many, many people are more than happy to chime in, even if they did not get married, what they would play hypothetically. So, yeah, we got a lot of responses.
Wow. All right. So give us a feel for what folks sent in.
So we kind of found a couple prevailing trends, right? So for the songs that people really resonated with, we had like Hey Ya by Outkast, I Want to Dance with Somebody, Uptown Funk is huge, Shout, Crazy in Love. We got a lot of really good responses. Michael Jackson, Beyonce, the Beatles, you know, it's these kind of things that have anchored wedding receptions for years are still very much present.
Yeah, it looked like it really, really spanned the decades in terms of some of these songs and artists.
Yeah, and that's what was so interesting about it. So, for instance, we looked at, like, just the top 200 most common ones, and I pulled the years when they were released for all of them, and they go back to, like, 57, right? And we saw a couple really interesting patterns take place. We saw how there were kind of, like, three humps when it comes to popularity. There was one in the mid-60s, one in the 80s, and then one in the contemporary era. And so we've been, like, really interested in, like, why these songs get played, what resonates with these folks.
Yeah, all right, so who said what about some of these songs? I was surprised that Hey Ya might be number one, yet Sweet Caroline by Neil Diamond is down at number 17.
Yeah, Well, keep in mind, again, we're talking about 168 different playlists here, a vast majority of diverse tastes. And the kind of the moral of the story here is that there's a ton of diversity when it comes to this. We have the staples, right? So if you're looking at our top 20, all of these got played quite a bit. And what it really kind of comes down to is, like, the top 300 or so accounted for about half the plays, but people added a ton of personality to their playlists. So the difference between Sweet Caroline, right, and Hey Ya, it's a big difference in the number of set lists that they appear on, but I mean, like, it's still a staple, you know? And we got a lot of Motown here, like Signed, Sealed, Delivered. Ain't No Mountain High Enough was a big presence. It didn't make the top 20, but we see a lot of songs that you would expect to hear quite a bit at this kind of thing, but from all different kind of eras.
Speaking with Walt Hickey, culture writer at 538.com. His piece is called The Ultimate Wedding Playlist. All right, how about some of the more popular artists?
Yeah, so Michael Jackson is really a staple, right? So he appeared 202 times across our playlist, and he's the top one. But I don't even think that really, really hammers home how much of a presence Jackson is, because, for instance, the Jackson 5 is our ninth most played artist, right? Outside of Jackson and all, we've got Beyonce, the Beatles, Stevie Wonder, very, very popular, Outkast just by virtue of Hey Ya, Queen is very popular if you're looking in the rock sector, Justin Timberlake, Whitney Houston, Rihanna, and then you got folks like Van Morrison, like folks from back in the day that had a lot of staples that still remain kind of eternal to this day, like Brown Eyed Girl.
Anybody suggest to you songs that are not allowed to be played at their weddings?
Yeah, you had artists kind of banned entirely, like Dave Matthews Band and Maroon 5. I mean, it's your wedding, right? You get to pick who you want to play and who you don't want to play.
Thanks, Walt. Walt Hickey at 538.com. 6 minutes now before the hour. Sounds like Lowe's has a soft spot for therapy dogs. If you're picking up some stuff for a DIY project at the Lowe's in North Regina, Canada, don't mind the canine keeping employee Owen Lima company. Mr. Lima suffers from a brain injury that requires him to have a service dog. CBS News says to his surprise, the store said he could keep his service dog, named Blue, by his side on one condition. The dog has to wear a vest like any other employee. You know, those red Lowe's vests? The store manager hired Mr. Lima to be the store's new customer service associate, greeting customers and managing carts in a red vest right alongside 10-year-old Blue. A photo of the tail-wagging dog that was posted on the Facebook page of Lowe's Canada this past week went viral with more than 11,000 shares. Because of his brain injury, Mr. Lima can have a hard time understanding people, especially when they talk fast. Whenever he gets frustrated, Blue is there to calm him down and prevent anxiety attacks. That'll do it for this program. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.